extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ah, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my single, solitary, lone partner in soccer. There is but one. He is strong. He is mighty. He brings his takes flaming every single show. Charlie Davies, what's up, man? It's just the two of us.
Hey, we're going to carry the show. I mean, it was never in doubt, to be honest.
It wasn't.
And I'm hyped. We're talking about the U.S. men's national team. Let's go.
Exactly. We just got off the conference call with Greg Berhalter. The Gold Cup roster is out. Canada's Gold Cup roster is out as well. There's some big news with them. Ayo Akinola has committed to Canada, but there's no Jonathan David on that roster, which is a little interesting. We'll go into that. Mexico's is not out, but we have a pretty good feeling that Tata's going to bring the first team, which makes for an interesting Gold Cup. We have seen that before. We got the transfer window flying open. It is. Check your calendars right now. Maybe you're listening on Friday or otherwise. But on Thursday, it is July 1st. That means the transfer windows around Europe are flying open. And the Caps are apparently after the Scottish Messi. I don't know. I was going to go with the Scottish accent, and then I backpedaled. But we will have Tom Bogert to join us to tell us about that and much more in the transfer window. This weekend, big weekend, 4th of July weekend for us. In the United States, in Canada, just another normal weekend. But lower.com field opens on ESPN on Saturday. You're going to be covering that match, Charlie. It is the Crew against the Revs. Historical, modern, just a great matchup to start that new stadium. Our third of 2021 at MLSsoccer.com. Doyle on the Gold Cup roster. Complete transfer window coverage. Sam Jones has the MLS MVP power rankings, which we talked about on the last show. And MLS Next Cup is ongoing, streaming at MLSsoccer.com. And that is where David Goss is. Doing his thing. You sent me a text this weekend, or you know, this week, Charlie. The days blend together.
Yeah, this week.
The man is jacked up.
He's jacked up. When Shalrie Joseph and his U15
heaven
team got into the quarterfinals,
heaven.
He was in heaven giving that interview. I've never seen him cheesing like that.
Glowing.
Like he was. Shalrie, tell us what it means.
Shalrie, you're my favorite player of all time. Tell me how you U15s did it. Well, the union knocked them off, but it's been a great tournament. Go check out the coverage at MLSsoccer.com. Let's waste no more time because we have so much to talk about here. Right into it, Charlie. This is what we like to do. This is what you like to think about. This is what we're looking forward to this summer after that big Nations League victory from the USMNT, the Gold Cup. We knew that this was not going to be the same roster that went out, competed, and ultimately won that Nations League tournament. Greg Berhalter's been saying it for a long time. We're going to have two separate groups. There might be a little bit of overlap, and likely that overlap is going to come from MLS players because it is the summer, and you've got transfer window open. You've got guys going into preseason camps trying to earn their way. Like, for instance, he said Brian Reynolds, not here because Jose Mourinho doesn't generally play younger players, so they want Brian Reynolds to be at Roma from the jump with the new manager to make sure he has a chance to get into the team. Otherwise, he's going to be working from behind. A couple other names in that scenario were Cameron Carter-Vickers, got to figure out his club situation, Eric Palmer-Brown to figure out his club situation, and Greg said, he admitted, our center back pool is a little bit light. So here is the roster for those of you who haven't seen it. Goalkeepers, Matt Turner, the likely starter. Funny story there. We'll get to that. Sean Johnson, Brad Guzan. Defenders, George Bello, Reggie Cannon. Shaq Moore, that was a little bit of a surprise. Donovan Pines, another slight surprise, but again, center back a little bit thin per Berhalter. Miles Robinson, a starter, says Greg. James Sands, Sam Vines, and Walker Zimmerman, the other presumed starter. At center back in the midfield, Kellen Acosta, Gianluca Busio, stand up, Kansas City, Sebastian Legette, Christian Roldan, Eric Williamson, who was my must-have on this roster, and Jackson Ewell. And up top, Paul Areola, Daryl DK, Nicholas Joachini, Matthew Hoppe, who's in for the first time, Jonathan Lewis, and Giassi Zardes. Give me your initial reactions. You saw this 23. You're thinking about the summer. You're thinking about the task at hand, which is both to win a Gold Cup, but also develop players to push into the first team to get to the World Cup. What are you thinking right now on this Thursday morning?
For me, I'm thinking there's not anyone that I'm particularly surprised about. That's one. Two, I think this group has enough quality to win. Now, if Mexico brings their A team, that's going to be a challenge, and especially with Mexico hungry to avenge that Nations League loss. But I think this is a solid group for the players that he can call into this camp. Now, I know there's going to be a lot of people who are like, Caden Clark, what about Caden Clark? He's going to RB Leipzig.
Well, he just had an appendectomy, man. They just cut his stomach open.
Right. And then Cade Cowell is another one. But I think there's a number of these players. You know, Aaron Herrera is a player that I've liked. They're going to get their chance in January camp, right? So it's not the worst for them to stay with their club and play. So I think from that standpoint, I'm okay with it. Jonathan Lewis is probably the one that I'm like, okay, he's had his Olympic qualifying. Didn't go so well. He's only has one start this year. 8 games played, one start, 281 minutes, one goal. Is that enough to warrant a call-up? Probably not. And there are probably a number of players who would have earned that call-up based on how they've played this season. But like all coaches, they have a soft spot for a certain player. They've seen potential. They've seen him in training. They've seen enough of him that they think maybe this will get him going or point him in the right direction or get him, you know,
I don't know, man. I combed through the depth charts in MLS because that's really where we're looking for this roster.
Right.
At wing, at left wing. And Berhalter said in his press availability that wing was thin too. Mm-hmm. I did not see at left wing a true winger or even like sort of a in between, like could play center forward, could play wing. I did not see anybody who was just like, yes, they're there. And I completely agree with you. Jonathan Lewis on the field for his club has not done enough to merit this call-up.
Right.
To me, this is a dice roll from Berhalter. This is we know you can impact the game off the bench. We've seen that in the league and with the national team. Maybe you can sort of get into a rhythm as a starter, maybe not. But you are worth the chance in this tournament just to see a little bit more, especially with so many other guys maybe nursing some injuries, you know, whether it be Ferreira or Clark or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I would like to see Cade Cowell there personally. I think he's done more this year for his team and his upside is just through the roof. But that's not the way it's going to be. Julian Araujo is the other one for me at right back. When we talk about Herrera, I would have Araujo right now above him. But Berhalter said he's not ready to commit to U.S. He's just not ready. He looks at that depth chart probably and he says, oh, man, that's going to be difficult because you have what? Cannon, who's the presumed starter here, Yedlin. Sergiño Dest could be moved over there if you get a left back solution that can justify moving him to the right side. Like, it's deep there. Brian Reynolds, of course. It's deep. So Araujo, I understand. I get it. I understand you saying, hey, let's pump the brakes a little bit. If I play in a Gold Cup game, that's it for me. I'm a U.S. national team player, and I have interest from Mexico. Tata Martinez
talked about him. Chicharito's his teammate. Hey, Chicharito's his teammate. Let's not forget
that's true.
Either.
And so is Jonathan Dos Santos. They got to be there. They're like, hermano, like, hey, exactly. It's pretty good over here with L3. You should think about it. So I get it. Julian Araujo's a young guy. He's in the beginning of his career. Let him make his decision at his own pace. And Andres in the chat here is reminding us that Efra is also there. And I think Efra's going into this Mexico team for Adolfo Pizarro. So, those are some of the snubs, some of the question marks. But you're right. There's not a ton to get upset about here. Although I'm sure U.S. national team Twitter will go that direction on us. Who are you most excited to see? Like you see these 23 guys and. Who's the one that you're saying, I just want to see them play with the national team?
There's a couple. Eric Williamson.
That's mine. 100%. Walk me through this. Give me your Eric Williamson logic because I'm right there with you.
So last year, I think he really came to the forefront for me as a player who is so dynamic as a holding midfielder, a player because he was an attacker in college, made the transition to becoming a more box to box, but he can keep the game in front of him. So he's okay. He's comfortable with playing the six, but he's definitely the definition of an eight. But he's good in tight spaces, good technique, not afraid to mix it up, can be physical. I've seen him cover for Diego Chara and vice versa. He can get into the box. He can combine. He can create as a player who's going to, you know, give you gravitas in the middle of the park. I like that about him. And I feel like he hasn't scratched the surface. The potential is extremely high with Eric Williamson. Another player.
Let me just jump in on Williamson right now. Let's dig in because he was the one that I said before this roster came out yesterday, everybody's freaking out on Twitter. Who's it going to be? Who's going to be on it? What are the snubs going to be? I said, I don't really care. The one guy I want to see is Eric Williamson, because when I look at this Gold Cup, we want to win. I want to win. We always want to win. Period. That's the deal. That's an assumed. Everybody knows that. But we also all know that the ultimate goal is to get to the World Cup and make an impact. And I'm looking at guys on this roster, and I'm trying to narrow in on the guys who I think can help a team, the first team, get to the World Cup and make an impact. And I think Eric Williamson is one of those guys. I don't know that there's anybody else in this pool that can do what Eric Williamson can do on the turn driving into space. Like, he has a good mix of physicality, of being really technical, but also being aggressive in moments that I'm not sure other players in this pool can bring the same thing, where it's, okay, I got a guy on my back, I turned him, now I'm driving into space, I'm drawing defenders, and now I'm able to dish. And I'm so technical that when I pass the ball, I'm putting on the right foot, I'm putting Christian Pulisic, I'm putting probably Weston, who would be playing us alongside him. I'm putting Gio Reyna. I'm putting whoever's playing up top in behind. I'm able to make those passes that unlock defenses or unbalance them. Other than Yunus Musah, who still very little experience, still very young. You know, I think Greg Berhalter showed in the last camp that he was still sort of pumping the brakes on him to make sure that he was ready for the moment. I think those two are sort of in the same mold, and that's exciting for me. I also get frustrated because Eric Williamson, it feels to me like, and I complain about this with MLS and et cetera all the time, our soccer culture, I feel like he had years just chopped off his career. Early developmental years where he just wasn't playing.
Yeah, but that's what makes you. You have those experiences, and I think that's what spurs you on, because there are some players who get all the experience in the beginning, and then you see them falter out because their expectations are super high. And they go, well, I've been doing this and I started at 18. And why do I have to fight for this position? It should be handed to me. I like when players have to earn it and have to go through the trenches, crawl out of it, come out on top. But you always can remember what it was like in those trenches.
I like that. The big chip on the shoulder, you're saying.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm very happy he's here. Who else are you excited for?
Miles Robinson. We talked about that center back position. Sometimes we feel like it's not strong enough. It's light. Maybe after John Brooks, you're kind of like, who is that guy? Is it Mark McKenzie all the time? Is there someone else who can push Mark McKenzie? You know, Aaron Long, I thought, was a player that should have been in Europe, probably was destined for Europe, obviously comes down with the Achilles injury. No one else is like...
He had the stamp, right? It was sort of stamped with Aaron. Mm-hmm. It was like, if you're playing... You're going to be this guy next to John Brooks. You compliment him. You both have a ton of experience. You have the attributes to be a great partnership at that level. Now we're figuring it out. What do you like about Reggie? What makes him a possibility there for you? Sorry, not Reggie.
Miles, yeah.
Yeah, Miles.
I think he reads the game extremely well. I think we've seen John Brooks. You need a partner that can compliment him with speed, making up ground, making up distance. Miles Robinson can do that. I think he's grown tremendously in his tackling, when to step up, when to, you know, come out of position to engage an attacker, winning those challenges, and then the distribution part. I think it's always going to, for center backs, you're always continuing to develop your technique and your first touch and awareness and distribution, whether it's long ball play, when knowing when to play into the channel versus when to play to feet, and playing to midfielders in those tight spaces where sometimes center backs are very hesitant to play to the feet of a midfielder who's checking with maybe one or two players on their back. You have to have confidence, but sometimes you also have to think, okay, Christian's checking to the ball. Everyone knows you can play to Christian Pulisic's feet, and Christian wants the ball to his feet, which is great. But in this instance, it's better for me and for the team to play this ball into the channel and like understanding when to do that versus when
reading that moment.
Yes. So yeah. I think other than that, I think Miles Robinson is a player I'm really looking forward to seeing in international competition.
And he might be the best 1v1 defender that we have. And he's been sort of unlucky with the national team with injuries. And I know Atlanta United fans like to groan when U.S. national team comes up because he's gone and gotten injured. But this is sort of his big chance. He's had a stop-start in this international career of his, this early one. And he's still super early in his professional career. But you listen to, like, you know, I was listening to the broadcast the other day, and Jeff Lorenowitz was saying, you know, we did a 1v1 drill in his rookie season. And for like 40 minutes, nobody could beat Miles Robinson. That wasn't the Atlanta United of right now. that wasn't like these attackers can't exploit open space and break open defenses. Atlanta United, that was the Atlanta United that was crushing people, and Miles Robinson was doing that. I would love to see him in a prolonged exposure in this tournament, and I think we will next to Walker Zimmerman. So that's exciting for me too.
And then two more. I'm really excited to see Nicholas Joachini. League Two, you're not getting all the press in the world. It's a very difficult league to play in because everyone's fighting. It's like survival of the fittest. You go out there, you know, there's a lot of talent, as you could see. You know, MLS is now purging League Two of the bright young talent.
Off, huh?
Yeah. So coming into this international competition, getting consistent playing time, seeing what he can do in CONCACAF. What does that look like? What's his upside? How does he fit in with the group?
Right wing. Yeah, according to Berhalter. That right wing for him is Joaquini and Areola, and the left wing is Hoppy and Lewis. Would Hoppy be your fourth?
No. Daryl DK.
Daryl DK.
I want to see him to continue to develop his ability to combine in the final third. His finishing, I want to see him continue to finish. But if he can just keep building off of each performance, because I still don't think Greg is certain, like, he's my starting nine, right? This will be a great opportunity to develop that relationship between the two, the team, but him, make that stamp of approval. All these European teams have their eye on him. After another stellar performance in this Gold Cup, he's gone, right? So then, you know, it just will further cement his place as the starting number nine for this men's national team.
Maybe even during the Gold Cup. What happens if the big comes in at that time? That's why you have Jesse Zardes on the roster, you would think. Tried and true, steady. And look, Greg did say in his media here that Daryl hasn't yet done it in a competitive game. And it's clear they've been bringing him along slowly. Didn't have him in the squad for the Nations League. Just had him with the guys to sort of experience it. And then he came out and did his thing in the friendly. But a friendly is a friendly. And I think that things change in this region and every region when there's silverware on the line, as there is in this case. I want to see Daryl DK do that too. A couple names for me, Matt Turner, Rev's goalkeeper. This is his opportunity. He's got to be the number one. I don't see it any other way. Greg said, and it was pretty funny on this press call, he was like, yeah, you know, he was asked about Turner, and he was like, yeah, you know, those guys at MLSsoccer.com, they love him. They keep saying he's the best shot stopper in MLS history, and I largely agree, which was hilarious. I was like, dude, you are tuned in, because we have been pushing that for a long time now. So I look forward to seeing Matt Turner as a starter here, see what he can do with the national team, whether he can, in fact, get in and push Zach Steffen. And then the other one I would throw out there is Gianluca Busio.
What about we can't forget Horvath here.
I'm not saying Horvath is not in the conversation, but like Steffen is Steffen's number one.
Let's just not skip over
Horvath.
I'm not
skipping him. I'm just saying the number one is Steffen. I think Horvath would say that too. Horvath doesn't have a club right now,
but he's the clear number two.
Okay, there's opportunity. I'm saying,
but there, yeah, a whole push into this group. Bunch of opportunity for Matt Turner.
Okay. Agreed. Good correction on me there. I appreciate that. And then Gianluca Busio, who I think has earned it with his play. The big question mark for Busio remains, like, what is he at club, but also what is he at country? Because Greg talked about he could play the six. Yeah, he can play the six, but you're not going to play him at the six against like a Canada. You're not going to play him at the six in a knockout round game when he hasn't had any experience at this level. Berhalter said he's going to get time. So then I start looking at those first two games, which are against competition that the U.S. will look at and say, okay, I think we should win these games. Anybody in this group should be able to step in and do the job well enough. And as a group, we should be able to do this job, especially at home, to win these games. Could Busio get a chance there? And if he does, where does he play? Because you have Acosta, you have Yule, you have Williamson. All those guys can play the six.
Mm-hmm.
To me, Busio is not a six in this group.
I think he's an eight.
He's an eight. He's a ball-playing eight. He's great on the switch. He can turn and push into space pretty well, even if he doesn't have the physical capabilities maybe of a Williamson. And he's incredible on set pieces. And if he gets in wide areas, his delivery is A+.
Yes.
So how does Greg Berhalter use Gianluca Busio? That is the big question with Gianluca Busio, period. Peter Vermees has answered it in a lot of different ways, whether it be a false nine all the way back to the six. I'm curious to see how Berhalter answers that question and what that maybe means for Busio's future. Because it seems like he's moving this summer. We'll talk to Tom Bogert about that in just a second here. What about Matthew Hoppy? What do you think about that? Because they're saying wing. And I get it. It's almost like that second forward. He can stretch the field for DK. He can come in and play off him. And we haven't seen him yet. This would be his debut.
I'm excited to see what he can do. I mean, he's produced in the Bundesliga for the worst team in the Bundesliga.
But he's
scoring goals, right? He has scored goals. But with that being said, I want to see what it looks like now with the best American players in MLS who have come together. And how does that look like? What does that look like against CONCACAF teams? how does his skill set translate to this U.S. men's national team? Is he just making straight runs in behind and scoring goals, or is there a little bit more to his game? Because typically when he was with Schalke, it was just in behind, right? And it's just like great runs and good finishing. But what are the other elements to your game? Because in international competition, every game is different. And whether you're playing on the road or you're playing at home, the way, you know, every player talks about international competition, how much more difficult it is than club football. And so I'm definitely interested in seeing what he brings to the table.
Introduction for him. All right, let's get to our 11. We'll compare. I intentionally did not reveal the group that I want to see. And of course, I think there's going to be some serious rotation, especially in the group stage for Berhalter. But let's just say this is first choice. This is the 11 you want to see. And it's a combination of developing players, but also winning the thing. I mean, that's important. Yep. You got to make a habit of that no matter what group is there. Starting goal, we both there with Matt Turner. Yes. Do we agree? All right, agreed. Check. You want to go first on the back line, or you want me to take you across mine?
I'll go first.
All right. Take me across. Right to left for me, all right?
Right to left.
Right to left.
Cannon.
Yep, check.
Robinson.
Check.
Zimmerman.
Check.
Vines.
Okay, I got Vines too. That's a conversation point. It's Vines and Bello. That's really the competition there. I'll tell you why I would go with Vines. He has more experience at this level.
Mm-hmm.
Greg has given him opportunities in the past, whether it be January camp or otherwise. He was one of the best players in Olympic qualifying, period. It's a position of need at left back, which, of course, that's a feather in the hat of George Bello as well. I just think Vines, in MLS and a national team, has been a better, more consistent, more reliable player than George Bello. He may not be as good as George Bello in sort of the tight spaces or maybe, you know, like cutting inside to score at times, but he delivers an incredible ball with his left foot. Physically, he keeps up with everybody. He can get up and down the field. And I think he has an opportunity to push into the first team. So I want to see more of him immediately. I want to see him be the starter. I want to see him lock it in. I want to see him introduce into Greg's mind the question of, could I move Serginho to right back, or could this just be my left back? Especially in qualifying, because it's not going – like, look, Honduras, Jamaica, El Salvador, that is not Barcelona. That is not La Liga. It's going to be much different, and there's going to be a serious travel premium put on guys coming from Europe. And when you have 3 games in 7 days, you have to have options. I think Vines could be that option.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, for me, it's experience. I think he's looked cleaner at left back, more natural. I think there's, you know, as much as you want your left back to attack and be involved, they need to defend first. Defending is vital for that position. So you expect, the expectations for me would be defend first, then attack later. I think you get that from Sam Vines, and he can give you a lot more. I think Georgie Bello is a little bit better in the attack, but defending, I think he needs to improve there.
Midfield, this is the biggest question mark for me, because I think the back line kind of writes itself. Goalkeeper writes itself. This midfield group, all these guys can play all over the place. All of them have their strengths.
I think it's easy for me.
Really? So yeah. Here's the group, just in case folks forgot. Kellen Acosta could play the 6 or the 8. Gianluca Busio could play, you would say, the 6 or the 8. Sebastian Legette, he's an 8. Christian Roldan, he's an 8. Eric Williamson could play the 6 or the 8. Jackson Ewell's a 6. What is the mix for you here? Who plays the 6?
Well, it is Kellen Acosta who plays the 6. But it's just what we saw in the Mexico match, where there's two that primarily sit behind a more advanced midfielder. So the balance is going to be always better when you have two that shade the back four and are responsible for sitting, dropping a little bit more deep in the midfield than being in advanced positions. When you attack, both Kellen Acosta and I think next to him is Eric Williamson, I think those two players have the flexibility to go like this, right? Or even both come up and someone else drop in. But both can attack, both can start the attack, and are comfortable on the ball. So I think you start with Kellen Acosta and Eric Williamson, and they both can defend and tackle on their own, in their own right. So I love that, and I think it's easy. People may argue Jackson Ewell, and we've seen Greg Berhalter go to Jackson Ewell multiple times. But at the end of the day, He's had his chance in Major League Soccer. He's had his chance with the U.S. Men's National Team, and he hasn't taken it. So it's the next guy up. I think everyone wants to see what a player like Eric Williamson can bring to the table. Kellen Acosta, he's done it. He's done it in the Nations League final against Mexico. He's earned it. He should be penciled in without a doubt. And then in front of him, in the more advanced attacking midfield role, it's going to be Sebastian Legette. He's going to get the nod. I think just under him, though, is Gianluca Busio. I think he's going to get, you know, the next opportunity. If, let's say, Legette picks up a knock or doesn't have the greatest performance, I think he's the next inserted in to see what he can bring to the attack.
Do you think that Greg will start with Williamson in that group? Because I have the same exact group. I mm-hmm. have Acosta, I have Williamson, and I have Legette. But I look at a Christian Roldan, mm-hmm. who early days, Greg Berhalter, was one of the guys that, quote-unquote, picked up the system quick, right? And has been really, really good for the Sounders this year. But could also potentially play right wing. He didn't get mentioned in that conversation when Greg was talking about it, but could play right wing. Do you think that that group, the one that we agree on here, is actually the group that Greg will put out? Because I think the big question mark is Williamson. And Roldan is the guy that I would, if I had to make a prediction of who would push in for him, that would be the one.
I'm pretty confident with my selection.
Okay.
but I wouldn't be surprised. But I am pretty confident with my selection. I know that's the best midfield that you can put together with this group, at least for the first game. And then Roldan, I think his flexibility, he's like a utility player. He can literally play in every position. And he's committed. That's a great person to have come into the game. You want to lock things down. You ever in a lead or you need some grit, you bring in Roldan for sure. When you're dominating possession and the team's just sitting back and you don't really have to worry about counterattack, then you can have a player like Jackson Ewell come in, because if there's no pressure on Jackson Ewell, he can hit any ball on the field. He has that precision. You give him time and space, that's not a worry. When you ask him to defend and cover ground in the midfield, that's when he struggles. So I think in this instance, you give Eric Williamson and Kellen Acosta a chance to play next to each other and Sebastian Legette in front of him because of his experience and how well he's typically done with the U.S. men's national team. And your midfield set.
This is the big question, too, because conditions are going to change for the U.S. Not in terms of where they are. They're going to be in Kansas City for the entire group stage. But the opponent, we still have a TBD on our group stage one opponent on July 11th. They're still figuring that out. There are qualifying games happening on the schedule. It's going to be last second, basically. Then you have Martinique up second on the 15th, and it's Canada. So I think the lineup we're talking about is more of a Canada lineup, right? So mm-hmm. let's think in those terms as we go up top. We both agree. DK at forward. You have to see it. And we haven't got it yet. You got to see it. How about at the wings?
I think it's really easy, too, in this scenario. Joe Akini is going to come in and start on the right. You wouldn't bring him in from his team in France for him not to at least get the opportunity from the very beginning, because, you know, everything that's gone on with his club, typically you're going to be in preseason. I know he's destined for a bigger move to a league where you're going to be playing in a first top division and gives you a better opportunity to develop and move on. So I think he's going to start as a clear and obvious on the right wing, as we would say on Instant Replay. And on the left wing, I think I'm going Matthew Hoppe as well. You're pulling him out, and you know this is an opportunity for him to showcase what he can do for not only the U.S. men's national team and their fans, but for other clubs in Europe.
I'm going to go against Canada. First two games of the group, I agree with you. Joachini, I agree with Hoppe. I'm going to go with Paul Ariello against Canada. Because think about that side that they're going to be dealing with. You're talking about Alphonso Davies just rampaging up and down. Now, you could argue that Joachini could pin him back, but I don't think that's necessarily realistic. You need somebody who can help and is willing to help defensively. Mm-hmm. To me, that's more Parleroy, and I've seen that Berhalter's trusted him in the past. But look, this is just the start of our Gold Cup conversations. We're going to be doing pre-games on all of these on Twitter Spaces. We have post-game, MLSsoccer.com, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, all the places you're used to seeing us on Club and Country, driven by Continental Tire. The entire Gold Cup, pre-post-game reaction. We'll have previews of every match right over there on Extra Time on our podcast channel as well as YouTube. We'll continue that all the way through World Cup qualifying. This is a huge year for the U.S. I was plotting out the schedule the other day, Charlie. It is grueling. For the players, yes. For us as well. For fans, I mean, it's going to be a lot, but it's going to be so exciting, and it's going to be sort of the anecdote to last year and everything that happened. All the delays, all the uncertainty in society and our lives and in soccer, it's all coming back. So it's super exciting. How about this, though? Canada, their roster is out. Iaconola is on it. He committed. He's all in. Now, Jonathan David is not on that roster, which is super interesting, but you have all the big names there. Lucas Cavallini, Kyle Larin, Alphonso Davies is in the group, of course. What do you think? What do you think about this team that the U.S. is going to take on in the group stage, but then also in World Cup qualifying? I mean, this is the big test.
Yeah, it's great for Canada. Getting that group of players together, more reps, more chemistry, building off of what they're able to do together in friendlies, because friendlies are friendlies. But
well, in World Cup qualifying, man, they had to get to
right,
but, had to grind their way in.
But now it's like, let's continue to make moves as a group and figuring out the dynamic within that 11. Alphonso Davies, we all know what he can do, right? Richie Larea, Tejan Buchanan has come in and added some spice to the Canadian national team. Kyle Larin is a baller. Jonathan David's a baller. They have some legit players, but at the end of the day, their backline is still suspect. So I think for them, it's figuring out how do we address that? How do we get better? So this is a great tournament for Canada in that respect.
Where's Io fit in with them? Because they're deep at center forward, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have Larin scoring goals. Cavallini's been there a long time, has quality. Io's a young, super promising player, but if you're talking about a two-forward setup, it's always going to be Jonathan David and one of those other guys. Mm-hmm. How can he break in? What does his future look like with Canada? Why do you think he made that decision?
That's a good question. I think for Canada, there's probably a number of players that were pushing him to join the Canadian Federation. I think Canada themselves probably pushed him to make him feel comfortable and feel at home with the decision. And ultimately, he was probably offered a chance to really get an opportunity to play. And he took it with both hands. Nothing's guaranteed with the U.S. men's national team. Even with all the uncertainty around the nine position, nothing's ever guaranteed. And I think if the Canadian Federation is going to say, hey, we're going to give you an opportunity, come in, you're going to be surrounded by, you know, top players, Jonathan David, Kyle Larin, Lucas Cavallini, but you're still going to get a chance. We want to bring you in. I think for him, for many youngsters in that position, you're like, all right, this feels right. I'm going to go with the country that's really going to give me the best chance to play.
It also just seemed like he identified more with mm-hmm. Canada. That's just where he felt more comfortable, where he felt more like himself. It's not going to be easy with them either. I actually think their number nine pool is deeper and better than ours right now, at least. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. Just start with Kyle Larin. It's like, well, we don't got that right now. Lucas Cavallini, well, we might have something in that proximity and Jesse's artist, maybe even better. But man, Jonathan David, it's going to be hard to push into that group. There's a ton of potential, and there's potential to do something unprecedented. And I think that would appeal to me as a young player if I felt, hey, I'm Canadian. Hey, I'm going to have a better opportunity here. But also, I have something that I can be a part of, a movement, something that will be a legacy for me and all these players around me. And that's what Canada's working on right mm-hmm. now. So congratulations, Iaconola, for making that decision. Super interesting to see how he does with Canada. Let's go over to MLS now and start breaking it all down. Because today is, as I said, July 1st. The window is opening in Europe. The flood's going to start coming. And also there's going to be a flood outgoing. You would think, Tom Bogert, what's up, man? Come on in. You know him well. Tommy Scoops. Yay. At Tom Bogert on Twitter. Handling business. Rocking a mustache. It's the same Tom we know and love. How you doing, man? July 1st. How's the text threads going? It's all flying in, right?
What's going on, fellas? Yeah, nice to, thanks for having me on. Nice to talk to you as always. This is more of just a reminder in the calendar, you know, the same way that MLS teams were negotiating and signing deals before the primary transfer window opened back in the winter. But, you know, the silly season's a 365-day-a-year occurrence, as you guys well know. So today's more of a marker in the sand. This is just when, you know, deals can be official in the sense that players can be registered and play for their new clubs in official competitions. But, you know, work has been going on for months and months, let alone for just these last couple of weeks.
Speaking of, Austin FC went out and got their number nine, or a number nine. We don't know if another's coming. Musa Gite is his name. He's a 21-year-old Senegalese forward from Grenoble. That's League Two. We've been joking about League Two, but man, when the MLS scouts come around, those clubs are like, let it rain, let it rain. They're getting money. They're getting money in 2021 from Major League Soccer. He had 8 goals in his last season in League Two, 15 career overall in League Two in 60 games. He's going to be a U22 player, one of those quote-unquote young money signings. If you listen to Allocation Disorder, you know all about that. You can have up to 3 on rosters, and Austin has 3. Rodney Redes, Kolmanic, who's the left back, and then now Gite. What does that mean for their DP spots? I've done a bunch of research into this, did a bunch of digging, Tom, because this has been the story with Austin FC. They have an open DP slot. What will they do with it? We thought the number 9 would go into that spot. It is not going to, or at least this one is not going to. What does Claudio Reyna have at his disposal now?
Well, yeah, thank you for being the one who's diving into the minutiae, into the fine print, and throwing the rule book at me, because, you know, I'm sure that was a lot of fun for you to just look over pages and pages of roster rules.
It's actually extremely fun for me. You would you would be surprised.
But yeah, so as you say, you know, that those spots are fluid. You're allowed to have 1 if you have 3 senior DPs who are over the max TAM threshold. You're allowed to have 3 if you have anything less than 3 DPs over the max TAM threshold, senior DPs. Again, this might sound confusing. This might be difficult to follow. I'll try to keep it quick. So the bottom line is for Austin, they can sign another DP, whether it's a young DP, whether it's a senior DP. Claudio Reyna didn't go into those specifics, but the word is that I guess Pochettino can be bought down, or he's under the max TAM threshold, which means that they can have 3 U22 initiative signings and 3 DPs. So I think that's big news for them, because I'm sure Gite looks a really, really interesting talent. He looks, you know, he's at a good age and a good profile, but, you know, Austin don't have a healthy center forward right now. So it'd be insanely unfair to expect this kid to come in from France. I don't know when his last, you know, competitive match was, but it must have been, what, the beginning of May? It'd be ridiculously unfair to expect him, okay, we've scored 1 goal in 7 games, get out there, kid, fix everything for us and you know, make us this great attacking team. And Claudio Reyna was kind of pointing to the fact of just him being a natural center forward will be enough. whether he's, you know, great or takes a little bit to get on, it'll just be nice to have a natural center forward. But again, given that they have the flexibility to not just add another piece, but another significant piece, I think is really important for them. And that's something that, you know, they really should be targeting this summer.
Well, I'm curious, as I think everyone else out here is curious to know, what is Daryl Dike's status with Orlando City? He crushed it in the English Championship. He comes back, bangs a brace, gets called into the Gold Cup. Is there a plan to move him on before that tournament ends?
I'd be surprised. Like I'd be surprised if, let's say, he left the tournament. I don't think that's something that would happen. Honestly, I and many others kind of assumed that he wasn't going to play again for Orlando. I thought that a deal might have been wrapped up, given all the interest and given that Orlando's been pretty straightforward, based on the reporting from Julia Poe, mostly of the Orlando Sentinel. Hey, this is our price, $20 million. If you pay it, great. He can leave. If not, we want him back. It's not like they're trying to offload him. So I was kind of surprised that any of this has happened, that he's still an Orlando player. So, you know, we'll see kind of how that evolves during this tournament. I don't think that, you know, look, if he goes out there and scores a ton of goals, I don't think that he's more valuable of a player today than he was yesterday. You know, I think that these teams in Europe, particularly England, the ones that saw how he handled the championship, and, you know, Watford has been one of the teams that have been heavily reported to be interested in him. You know, they were in the championship. They saw him firsthand. So I don't think that this is going to be a huge explosion for his value if he does great. And I don't think that it'll be an indictment of him if, let's say, he doesn't score a ton of goals.
Does $20 million seem like the right number? I'm just throwing this out to all of us. Because if I, like, in my mind, if I'm Orlando City and somebody rolls in at 15 to 18, I would find it hard in their position to, at least at the end of this window, to say, ah, no, that's not for us. Because there's so much risk involved. He could get injured. His form could go down. I mean, knock on wood, I don't want any of that to happen for our beloved. But, like, that could happen. Like, so at some point when you drafted this guy in the super draft, you essentially acquired him for free. He's on very little money. Mm-hmm. That's a club-changing fee, both in terms of your reputation and the marker that you've set, but also the income and your ability to go improve the squad with that money.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And I when that number started to get floated out, I thought $20 million, like kind of like you said, this is somebody that you acquired for nothing. This is somebody who you're not paying a ton and you've only had for a year. I was like, $20 million, that sounds crazy. But I mean, we kind of take a step back, you know, looking at his goal scoring record in the championship. And again, that was half a season, small sample size. I get it. You know, he's not going to be a 30 million player or something like that. But it kind of makes sense when you kind of put it into pounds. Like, that's what, let's say it's 10 million pounds up front and incentives for another 5 million. That's nothing for a club like Everton. That's nothing for a club like Watford. With the TV money that's are hanging around in England, like, it makes a lot of sense the more and more you think about it, that would be the asking price. And it's not like it's something insanely, you know, unrealistic. Now, will they get it? I guess we'll see. But I think that's at least a decent ballpark. And why not? You know, and why sell yourself short? Why not put that number out there?
I think the number's there to make sure that you're not getting bids of 9 or 10, right? So the closer you are to 20, the more likely they are to sell. And let's just say a club comes in for 17 million, like, this is the most we can do. Then you say, okay, well, guess what? The percentage that we get back on our on the sell-on fee is maybe 25% or 40%. You can negotiate in other ways to make it, you know, make the value a little bit better. So I think it's a great tactic done by Orlando City to make sure that they're getting as much as they possibly can for a young talent.
Can I rewind us here? Because Austin FC play tonight, Thursday night, mm-hmm. July 1st. We're not going to preview this game against the Timbers on FS1 and Fox Deportes. It's at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Just because, look, most of you listen on Friday, I think, if I see that our number is correct. So you'll probably have already seen this one. But I want to rewind back and throw out something crazy and, like, just guide people back through this DP situation. Like, for instance, Alan Pulido is a senior DP. The amount that he costs in transfer fee and his salary means that that's period. He's going to be a max DP. But, like, if they can buy Bob and Pochettino, they could go get another full-on DP, and they could go get another TAM player. How about Albert Elise as that other TAM player, if it's possible? They need a right winger. They need goals. They need somebody who can play up top. Boavista has been a train wreck from all indications. Why not Albert Elise? I hear that he's had a couple offers from MLS teams. And why wouldn't he? We know he can perform.
Joel Campbell.
Throw Joel Campbell out there? Okay.
I'm going to throw Joel Campbell.
That would be a TAM level, you would think. And then you would still have space to go get a full DP if you wanted it. Let me just throw this question to you guys. If Austin's going to go out and use a full DP slot, senior DP, look, they could also go out and do a young DP and a TAM player, whatever. What positions would they be targeting? You would still say number 9, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would. Or you'd say somebody who's like a hybrid who can play right wing or center forward so that you don't kind of lessen your investment in Gite.
What about center back? I'm just saying for a TAM level.
Yeah.
We could buy them down. They are DP in name, but they are also TAM, almost like a Xavier Arriaga type.
I mean, that would make sense. I think that they just have a much more pressing need with attacking talent and goal scoring. And, you know, the recent track record of TAM / lower DP center backs in MLS has not been very high. We'll see how, you know, Teenage Hadabe kind of pans out in Houston. But Alan Franco's taken a little bit in Atlanta to kind of get settled. He hasn't really gotten into the team yet as expected. So, I don't know. I think that just in MLS, the track record is there that you spend your money kind of and your roster resources in that front three. And again, for a team who scored one goal in 7 games, I think that, you know, that's where you got to, you know, be putting all these midseason resources towards.
That's fair. Zeros at home are no good when you're the one putting up the zeros, but when you're forcing the other team to have zeros, that's pretty good. So maybe Austin can turn it around, but they do need goal scoring. Yeah. Yeah. What else are the needs out there? You got to call them up at MLSsoccer.com. 27 teams, 27 needs. What are the biggest needs in MLS right now?
Yeah, I'll hedge quickly in just saying that I tried to break it down into needs versus could use because there are a lot of teams that are pretty full or kind of, again, use all of the resources in the winter and early spring. There are a couple that comes to mind. I feel like I've said this sentence, I don't know, 1,000 times over the last 11 months after Vancouver sold Hwang In-Boom, but the Whitecaps need a DP number 10. They've cycled through targets after targets. A lot of the targets they've kind of looked at have been they've been trying to hawk the free agent market, and the latest is Scottish number 10, his name is Ryan Gauld. It was reported by AFTN that they had put in an offer for him. Sources can confirm that. I haven't heard any updates on that front. There has been, you know, a lot of rumors. You know, that there have been some sections that have said it's just about a done deal, and then there have been other places that have said he's still waiting to decide. But, you know, he was dubbed the Scottish Messi when he broke through in his teenage years. Then he got sold to Sporting CP, I believe, or Benfica, one of those Portuguese giants. He didn't quite live up to that world-class potential. He didn't quite turn into the Scottish Messi, but flew under the radar, stayed in Portugal, and this year in the top flight, he had 9 goals and 7 assists for a team that barely avoided relegation. So he was the reason why. I think I read something that he either scored or assisted like 60% of their goals or something this year. So, you know, he would have kind of a similar burden in Vancouver if that comes through. But again, like, they just desperately, desperately need a number 10.
Oh, please, just get it done. Just get it done. Just finish it off, man. If it's a Scottish Messi, whatever. I mean, that's one of the best nicknames of all time. It reminds me of the Haitian Xavi. And you know how much I enjoy that one. Who else has needs? Big needs, like DP needs.
Yeah, I mean, Nashville, I don't know, given that their attack has looked good this year and they've been scoring goals, I don't know how much of a need it is, but it's something that's going to happen. They scouted Liga MX, you know, the name that is looking most likely and looking very close is Ake Loba. That's a player that they tracked for years. He was even, you know, 2 years before they were in MLS, they had him on their discovery list. He was somebody who, you know, they had to reach out to, you know, the league office to say, hey, when can we start doing our discovery list? Because we want to put these like X amount of names on it. And he was on loan in Mexico as a young player from a Peruvian club. And he kind of played his way out of like their, reputation. Range. Yeah. Or not even necessarily the money, because Monterrey ended up paying $9 million for him, which is a lot. You know, I was hearing at the time that, you know, they put in a really significant bid. It wasn't quite $9 million, but it wasn't far off. And he, you know, didn't become an every game starter at Monterrey. And there had been rumblings that, you know, there's a new coach that they wanted to change things up. And, you know, there's been a lot of reports about him kind of being close to this deal with Nashville. And he's somebody that has never fallen off their radar. Whether it's him or somebody else, they are going to bring in, you know, another big DP this summer. And that just makes him all the more dangerous. I guess moving on one more, you know, we've talked about DK a lot, so I won't go too far on this, but whatever it is, Orlando need an answer at center forward. You know, DK is the answer if he stays or if he's sold. It would not be wise to just rely on Alexander Pato, who, you know, he looked really great in preseason. He looked encouraging in his first game, his MLS debut, but he got hurt in that first game and has not returned yet. So they need to hedge their bets and just kind of bank on, you know, another player and whatever Pato can give you, Pato can give you.
All right. Transfer window's open. How about we give a round of applause for Tom Boger? You can follow him on Twitter at Tom Boger. Tommy Scoops, thank you, Tom. This is the fun time of year. I know it's stressful for you, man, but we appreciate all your time. Let's keep it moving, Charlie. Let's hit the weekend. And the big game in Columbus, lower.com field. The third time this year that we open up a soccer-specific stadium. I said about Austin. I said before that about Cincinnati. It will never get old to me. It is a beautiful thing. I started in this MLS game, covering it at an independent league baseball stadium, and this is nowhere near that. This is world-class. It's absolutely beautiful. Columbus, New England, 5 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, DAZN up in Canada. You're prepping. You're doing what I'm doing all week probably, which is going through all the tour videos and all the, you know, photo galleries and reading about all the people that have been there and seeing what all the new traditions are going to be. As a player, as a commentator now, as a lover of soccer in this country, in this region, what does this stadium mean to you? What does this mean, do you think, for Columbus fans?
Well, it's going to be the staple of Columbus, of the organization. This is a place that they will tried to turn into their fortress for not only the crew, for the U.S. men's national team when they play, and every time they play Mexico, there's a new stadium to be played in. Everyone's buzzing about this because it just shows the growth of our country, the growth of the sport in our country. And I think for Columbus, you're coming fresh off an MLS Cup. Now they haven't had good performances this year. Now's the time to turn it on. If there's ever a time to get going again, to put yourselves in a position to make a run, it's now. New stadium against the top team in the Eastern Conference in the New England Revolution. It's time to show up. So I think for Caleb Porter, he has that bad reputation of his teams the following year after playoffs just tanking. Now it's time to start performing and starting to show that form that they showed last year.
I don't think there's any chance this team tanks. They have too much talent. They're not going to tank, and they've already been good at home. Really, it's the road form they got to fix. Mm-hmm. But this is the opportunity, right, to like not just bring in the community, but to bring everybody in and say, this is our home now. We had this historic home. We had the, you know, Crew Stadium will forever live on in our hearts. And it's not going anywhere, by the way. It's down the road. We have a training complex there. There will be events there. The community will use it. but look what you built. And that's really the message for me. Look what you built, Columbus. Look what you built, Save the Crew. Look what you built, supporters, who thought you might lose your team. And in the end, what you got out of it was an ownership group that's committed, that has shown this year, even if they make mistakes, will listen to you, who ponied up and made a world-class facility your reality and your future, and who have invested in your team. We're talking about big transfer fees out of Liga MX. I mean, Lucas Ellerón was exactly that. He helped you win MLS Cup. The way that they've built this roster, bringing in Kevin Molino, etc., this is a team that can win MLS Cup again. So make the run and do it in this beautiful venue that you'll call home for the foreseeable future. There are some interesting things just on the like architecture side. It's the second largest supporter section in the league, I think behind LAFC at right around about 3,400. Well, no, LAFC has 3,252. That was pretty obvious. So it's got to be somebody else. Either way, second in the league. That's awesome. You got a couple different venues to go. Of course, all the, you know, all the clubs and stuff like that. But I think the supporters area is really cool. I think the beer garden is awesome. They have on the outside sort of this square, this plaza where they can have watch parties. They have the soccer pub there as well. And they have a new tradition, Charlie. They're borrowing a little bit from the Timbers. Not going to lie about that. And Crew fans, you got to admit that is the case. I'm just going to go read for you some of the background on what's going to happen for this unique goal celebration. Essentially, there are going to be three people chosen for each game. They are going to represent the club, the community, and the supporters. They're going to also basically be like a visual representation of the three guys in hard hats. I'm assuming they're going to rock the hard hats. They're going to have the, the jackhammer. And when they score, just like Timber Joey fires up the chainsaw, they're going to just start jackhammering, man. Just letting this thing fly. Just breaking up rocks, breaking up concrete, just letting it go. And apparently the players and members of the team are the ones that approached the Nordic about this. They said they want something, a unique goal celebration, that disrupts the opponent. And I got to say, as someone who's walked around New York City for 10 years, jackhammers will disrupt.
Oh, they're going to disrupt. I'll tell you right now, Timber Joey disrupts people.
When you hear that.
I'll never forget. I was on the field. I hear, and you catch yourself on the field. Like, where is that guy walking around? And are they literally letting somebody walk around with a chainsaw?
They are. That's the difference probably with Timber Joey is that dude like walks around and like revs at random times during the games, I feel like. Whereas I don't think it feels less likely that three folks in hard hats who represent the community, the club, and the supporters are just going to be randomly jackhammering. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
Depends.
Just air jackhammer. You don't have to jackhammer anything. You just fire it off in the air. Just I mean, it is kind of funny, the visual of it. But I'm open to seeing how this thing plays out. Like, they were looking for something unique. They were looking for something that will represent their history. They were looking something to celebrate the supporters and who they have been and still are. This is it. And at the end of the thing, I think the player who scores now gets the broken up brick. That's a little bit more manageable than a slice on a log. I got to tell you, man. Like, it keeps better. It's a little smaller. You know, you can put it in your bag on the way home. But a big game here for the Crew against New England. What's the key for New England? What does this game mean for New England? Because they had a good week and then they lost. What do you think is at stake here?
I think this is an opportunity for them to continue to push themselves up the table. When you look at the Revolution, you think of Carlos Hill and how incredible he's been. The back line, you have Andrew Farrell, who's, I think, always going to be starting as a center back within that team. I think Brandon Bye has come a long way. DeJuan Jones on the left side, he's not a typical left back, but he's done the best job for the Revolution at left back. So he continues to play there each week. But it's John Bell who's come in for Henry Kessler, which is why Henry Kessler is not on the Gold Cup roster. It's because John Bell has come in and played incredibly well until this last match against FC Dallas. He had his you know, for anybody coming into the professional game, you start getting a run of matches, you're always bound to have that one poor performance that kind of allows you to reevaluate where you were and you got to kind of build yourself back up. And it's usually mental. It's that mental challenge an obstacle you have to overcome. So no doubt he's proven to me that he has the quality to be a strong center back in this league. So Henry Kessler, John Bell, that combination, figuring out who's the best player, who's going to play every minute. The left mid position, left wing, Arnór Tristason, they brought in from Iceland, hasn't really panned out so far. He's struggled. They've given Teal Bunbury minutes there, and we've seen what he's done in this league, but he primarily is stronger on the right wing as opposed to the left wing. Tejon Buchanan's on the right. He's a stud. You know, this is a young up-and-coming rising star. Then Gustavo Bow has been up top because they haven't felt comfortable enough playing with him on the left, because when you're on the left, you have to come back and defend, and that's not been his game. They've gotten the most out of him when he's closer to goal. The problem now for the Revolution is you have Adam Buxa, who is a DP, who is not playing. You can't have a DP in this league when you only have three of them on the bench. That it just doesn't work like that. So what's the options if you're the Revolution? One, you sell him. He goes back to Europe, and you try and reallocate that money into another position, whether it's a defensive midfielder to play next to Matt Polster or Tommy McNamara. Both of them have done pretty well this year, but you need to kind of reinvest it within the squad. So I think that is probably the biggest question mark over this New England Revolution side.
Do you think something could happen this summer?
I do. I know, like,
as quickly as this summer, something could, a domino could fall. I mean, whether that be with Books or Bo, or even with Tejon Buchanan making a move.
Yeah. I know last summer, Mallorca was really interested in Adam Buxa. It didn't happen for him to go to the Segunda Division. Now, he's a young, up-and-coming Polish striker. There are going to be clubs who are interested in him. If Mallorca came in for him last year and he's still producing coming off the bench for the most part, there's going to be interest. There's always interest in a striker. So I think, you know, with Tejon Buchanan going to the Gold Cup, again, all eyes are on him because he has that electric pace and that confidence that you can't teach, and he can beat you on the dribble. He's continued to develop. He's a player you could sell on. So I wouldn't be surprised.
5 p.m. Eastern on ESPN, the opening of lower.com field in Columbus. Crew taking on the Revs. Big game. It's the biggest game of the weekend by far. If you're going to watch one game this weekend, just one, because it is 4th of July weekend, so you got some other options, make that be the one. Before we get on and go through some of the ESPN Plus games and the players we're watching, Charlie, how do you celebrate the 4th? What kind of 4th of July guy are you?
Cape Cod.
Oh.
Let's go. Beach, barbecues. I mean, riding the bikes, ice cream. It's, you know, you're just outdoors with the boys. That's New England. New England is all about the 4th of July. So
how do you approach the fire? I don't, you know, look, everybody do what's legal in your state, jurisdiction, city, whatever it may be. Do not do anything illegal. Mm-hmm. But I got made fun of on this show. I can't remember if you were on or not for my Black Cats references. Do you know what a black cat is?
I want to say yes.
Well, you can't want to say it. You either know or you don't know.
Yes, I do.
Describe it.
Just a crazy, like, firework that you light on the ground, kind of like a Roman candle.
No, not really. No, they're the little mini ones. You know, they got the packets. You light them, and blah, blah, blah. It's like the rapid fire little guys. Okay, so we're. I don't know if you're on the same page here. I was going to ask you.
Roman candles are much more intense. Which all right. I grew up in New Hampshire, so trust me, they know all about the fireworks game.
All right. Yeah. Everybody be safe out there. Have fun.
Yes.
Do what's legal, but have a great 4th of July. And in Canada, have a great Sunday. Let's talk about our ESPN Plus game of the weekend. Every other game is on MLS Live on ESPN Plus. So if you don't have it and you listen to the show regularly, I don't know why you don't have it. It is the best deal in soccer streaming by far. You get a ton of leagues, and obviously you get MLS straight to you. What's your ESPN Plus game of the week, Charlie?
LA Galaxy at home to Sporting Kansas City. The 3 versus the 2 seed in the Western Conference currently. Chicharito coming off a brace at home, beating on the road at San Jose, and then SKC beating LAFC at home. And Daniel Shalloway kind of coming into his own right now.
Exactly, I mean, exactly as we predicted in the MVP race. Shalloway versus Chicharito, MVP candidates, both of them head to head.
So I think just that's a matchup that has fireworks.
I looked at LAFC's schedule because I had the sinking feeling that they basically have beaten up on teams that are not so good. Mm-hmm. And they've lost to teams that are legit, like Sounders. Mm-hmm. They lost to Portland. I mean, this is Sporting KC side that's legit. So to me, this is a litmus test for both of them. Mm-hmm. I was going to say I believe in Kansas City more, but Alan Pulido is now out. So I have some question marks there. To me, this is an opportunity for Kansas City, one, to prove they can do it without Pulido. And they had to do that last year. Pretty good last year. They got to do it again this year.
But they're not the same without him.
No, they're not the same without him. And for LAFC to prove that they can beat a legit competition in the Western Conference. Because so far, I'm not sure they've done it. We mentioned San Jose. Jesse Fiorinelli is out in San Jose. That was big news this week. They've got to get signings right. It's been a while since they've done that. It's not a huge surprise to me that Fiorinelli's time came in this sense. You never want to see anybody get fired. I don't celebrate that. Anytime we come on this show and talk about coaches losing their jobs or being under pressure or GMs or sporting directors, like that's not the right way to do it. But at this point, I think San Jose had to look pretty hard at what they've been doing, where they're going, and what their results are, and say, well, we got to make a change. And this was the change that they made. Now, Matias Almeida's signings haven't been. That's why.
Remember last time you said who's on the hot seat? I threw Almeida on the hot seat, but you could just throw the whole organization on the hot seat, to be honest. So, yeah, Matias Almeida, again, still, you have to prove something. You can't win 5-0, lose 5-0. Win 5-0, lose 5-0. There's no plan. I don't see that with San Jose. I feel like it's you throw people out and you hope for the best. That's not how you coach a team.
And sign your guys from back in the day and have a lot of them not live up to expectations. Chris Leach steps in. It seems to me like he'll probably be the guy who owns that side of things going forward. Of course, he had a nice run there as head coach before Matias Almeida came in. We'll see what they can do. But they got a lot of work to do in San Jose. My ESPN Plus game of the weekend is definitely going to be New York Red Bulls. One, I want to see how Orlando deal with the pressure that New York's going to put in this game, the directness, sort of the chaos that they introduce. I think Daryl Dike can thrive in that sort of environment. And I say it over and over and over again, watch Daryl Dike in MLS every chance you get before he's gone. Because there's going to come a time, and I know that Orlando City keeps saying, well, we'd like to keep him. But come on, there's going to come a time when he is gone, and we're going to have to watch him on Saturday and Sunday mornings. When you have your chances to watch at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on a Saturday on MLS Live on ESPN Plus, you take it to watch Daryl Dike. And by the way, you take it to watch Orlando City because they're one of the best teams in the league right now. Did you see the video of them celebrating after they won against Miami? That is the vibe. They were going crazy in the locker room. Playing music, jumping up and down. Oscar Preja's in the middle, hugging Nani. Nani's right in the middle of it. He's grinding. He's all about it. Like, that's what you want to see. Those are the teams I want to see. The teams that were down in the dumps. And there's always going to be that. There's always going to be teams that hit rough spots. But then regroup, figure out the path forward, commit to it, and get rewarded for it. And right now Orlando's getting rewarded for it. And I think New York Red Bulls are on the cusp of getting rewarded for theirs as well. So that would be my ESPN Plus game of the week. Some other good ones out there. Colorado-Seattle on Sunday at 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. Eastern. That's a good one. Two of the top teams in the Western Conference. And I also throw out Nashville-Philadelphia on Saturday. I think that one is interesting for a lot of reasons. And then we got FC Cincinnati going to Houston. That could be win number 3 in a row, man.
You don't say.
It could be.
You know what's funny? I think it coincides with a signing of a particular center back named Jeff Cameron. Possibly?
I don't know, man. I don't know if this is all
You don't
Jeff.
Think he's been a big part of that turnaround?
I mean, he has to have been.
Yes, no doubt.
Fine.
No doubt.
I would say there's more to Lucho and Brenner that they need to actually take this next step, but they needed to calm some things down, and Jeff has certainly
helped. The back line was chaos. Dumpster fire.
Yeah, sus.
Yeah.
All right, who's your player to watch this weekend, and we'll get out of here, Charlie.
My player to watch this weekend should be no surprise. It's Ricardo Pepi playing against Vancouver, coming off a brace. Right? Vancouver, let's be honest, not strong is being polite. And that's where they are. They're not strong. And for FC Dallas, they need to turn around. They've had a really difficult, struggling year. And now you're getting to play against the bottom team in the Western Conference in Vancouver at home. And Ricardo Pepi, I mean, that first finish against the New England Revolution, I thought this kid, he's got something. He's got something different. He's long, you know, he's long strides, but solid finish, good run. I like what I saw from him, and I'm curious to see if he can continue that that's why he'd be my pick for this week.
Tell me what you saw from Pepe, because the first one was nice. He gets in behind. It's a beautiful ball from Ferreira, and the first time is just on the money. It could not have been a better finish. I was in a lot of ways more impressed with the second, with sort of the peace of mind, the pace, but I think more importantly, the patience to set up like three defenders and Matt Turner. When you see Pepe the player and you think about his long-term future, and now we talked about it on the last show, there are rumors that Serie A could be in for him. He seems like maybe the next in this line of MLS youngsters that could go overseas. And Greg Berhalter did mention him in the press where he said it's just a little too early for Ricardo. He's starting to show what he has, but it's a little too early. We want to see him with Dallas. He seems to have a starting spot. What is the scouting report from you on Ricardo Pepe?
I think he's strong. I think he's creative, and you saw that in the second goal. The composure to dribble to that fake shot, get around the keeper, and then bang it upper 90, kind of just clinical, good runs. I think the intentions around the 18, just getting forward, combining, making good runs. I think he can combine well. I think just his movement is fantastic for his age. And you throw in like the finishing capabilities. That shot to beat Matt Turner. We saw Matt Turner against Maxi Morales from the 6-yard box, get down quick. You know, he's not easy to beat. He's one of the best shot stoppers in the league. Ricardo Pepe made him look average because it was that good of a finish. So that's why I'm really interested in him and if he can continue to go. Use this as like his jump off. That match against the Revolution, have that be your standard and keep pushing.
I'm going to go Jefferson Soteldo for Toronto. Apparently, he's going to be back against DC this weekend at Audi Field on Saturday. That's 5:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN+. There's not going to be any Alejandro Pozuelo, but they need every bit of inspiration that they can possibly get because they are going to lose players for the Gold Cup and important players. And Chris Armas is – I mean, look, some of his press availability lately has been – it's been rough. The quotes coming out, the vibe on the team – just the way, this season is.
It's horrible.
It's horrible for them. Everything it's horrible about it. For anybody who had any expectations of Toronto FC this year. It's like rough.
My thing is, how do you go from perennial powerhouse league, not even just Eastern Conference league, to absolutely shambles? No guidance, no leadership. That's what it comes down to. Accountability. So what do you do from here on out? And then you talk about losing players.
And not just players, some of the most important players in your team.
Yeah.
Well, they'll still have their two DPs. Soteldo's back from Copa America. He seems to be healthy. Pozuelo's still dealing with that hamstring issue from last week. But you're going to lose Alexa Larea and Osorio, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll see what they can do. But going to D.C. used to seem like it might be an easy task. This D.C. team pushes you right now. So we'll see what they can do. MLS Soccer and the MLS app, all the coverage of MLS Week 11. Any thoughts on that Gold Cup roster? The U.S. is Canada's, Mexico's, any across the region? Let us know. David Goss will be back next week to talk about the rest of CONCACAF. I'm sure he'll have that all laid out for you.
Oh, yeah.
And Doyle will be back, too, to break down the weekend. Oh, that's a good note. July 4th. We're off on the 5th. Everybody is, I think. Most people are. That's like the national holiday, the way they're doing it. So we'll be here on the 6th, on Tuesday. So don't look out for us on Monday. We will release the show on Tuesday. We'll see you then. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be right back.